The State Opposition has made claims this week that they've been leaked information set to be announced with next month's budget concerning the North-South Corridor. The leak states that the project could have its completion date pushed all the way back to 2035. Joining us now is State Political Correspondent Catherine Cochran from the University of Adelaide. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do we know about these leaked documents?
So it's one of what has been a number of leaks against the Marshall government recently, and this one relates to the North-South Corridor project and specifically the South Road upgrade. So by way of background, the previous Labor government had embarked on a project with the aim of creating a continuous road link from Old Nawanga right up to Nuriupta so that vehicles could travel the full distance without stopping. So this is actually the biggest infrastructure project in the state's history. But Labor, when they embarked on this project, seemingly never had a complete plan on how they could feasibly achieve it in terms of putting a major roadway through the built-up inner suburbs. So they set about delivering, I guess, the easiest stages way back in 2007, and now the current government is planning what to do about the trickiest part, which is the final eighth stage between the River Torrens and Darlington, which is right through that inner city built-up area. So in this case, Labor has obtained leaked cabinet documents, which discusses what they might do. And as you mentioned, it suggests that the project might not be finished until the mid-2030s, although the government has disputed that, insisting that it will be finished by 2030. So the opposition, I guess, has made a lot about that blowout in the timeframe. But as I mentioned, they began this project without really having a clear, fully costed plan on how to finish the project. So I think, I mean, that's what oppositions do in terms of raising those types of issues. But probably the more important question right now, especially for the hundreds of homeowners and businesses that are in the path of this final stage, is more about how to actually deliver this project, how to complete it. And I guess more broadly also the extent to which taxpayers are willing to bear extra costs that might be involved to minimise some of these potential impacts. So both the major parties are committed to completing the project. The options seem to have been distilled down to two different options. One would be a raised open roadway, and the other would be to include some tunnels in some of those sections through the most built-up areas. The prospect of having an entire super tunnel, which was mentioned earlier on, seems to have fallen by the wayside. So the two, I guess, most prominent options at the moment seem to be an open roadway that would cost about $9 billion and it would require the acquisition of 875 properties, including the closure of 151 businesses. And what has, I guess, taken a lot of prominence in the coverage is that it would also include demolishing 53 heritage buildings. The tunnel option, or the inclusion of some tunnels, on the other hand, would take a lot longer to build, which is why this blowout in the timeframe comes into play. It would also cost about $10 billion, so it's about $1 billion more, but it could reduce the number of property acquisitions down to less than 400, about 60 businesses closing, and as few as a dozen of the heritage buildings being lost. So of particular note, a tunnel option would save the Theberton Theatre, which was opened in 1928, and that is in the path of the roadway. But either way, this project's going to have a huge impact on that area, and I guess the drawn-out planning process is already having quite an impact on the local community in terms of the finances and the stress as well. We've been promised a definite plan for a number of months now, but it looks like the budget, which is coming on the 10th of November, may actually finally provide a clearer picture on what's going to happen. And until then, I guess we'll just listen to more speculation.
And it has been a difficult couple of months for the state government. And you said this isn't the first leak that has happened recently. What are the sort of bigger implications of this leak within the Marshall government?
Well, it suggests that not everybody in the government, and certainly some of the public service, is not necessarily on board with where the government is headed at the moment. Of course, earlier this year, due to the country members' allowance scandal, they lost a number of key people out of the cabinet. And so a number of those that have been replaced by what I guess many would regard as, I guess, lesser individuals taking those positions, particularly Corey Wingard, who struggled to answer some quite basic questions in media interviews, including questions about how much the new train system will cost. So that's a privatised train system compared to the current government-operated train system. So I think there seems to be a lot of, I guess, unhappiness and perhaps disillusionment around where the government's heading at this time. And I guess it's certainly undermining for Stephen Marshall. The other issue that I guess is coming up in terms of the time frame issue, that seems to be a theme that's emerging, where we're seeing a lot of delays in decision making. And so that always, when you have delays and you have a time for speculation, that always allows for, I guess, people to put information out that perhaps maybe serves their agenda or what have you. So I guess if they made definite decisions, then they would probably close down some of that opportunity.
Speaking with our state political correspondent, Catherine Cochrane from the University of Adelaide. And a cluster of baby deaths at the Women's and Children's Hospital has prompted a review. So what do we know at this time?
Yeah, so this is another case which features a leaked document as well. So earlier this week, the parliamentary committee heard that there had been 4 deaths in 4 weeks attributed to a lack of local paediatric cardiac services in Adelaide. So a well-known obstetrician, John Svargos, who leads the Women's and Children's Hospital Alliance, which is a lobby group for both a paediatric heart and lung life support system, which is known as an ECMO, and also for a cardiac surgery unit. And he gave evidence to the parliament and accused the bureaucracy of procrastination and an inability to make decisions. So again, that goes to, I guess, this emerging theme that I've just mentioned. So there has been a proposal to establish a life support service at the hospital that has been ongoing. However, the surgery unit has been a bit more contentious. So from the information that is publicly available, it appears it would be actually cheaper over the medium term to have the local surgery unit, but the government has also received advice that concerns the low numbers of patients in South Australia, and that would mean that the staff in the unit would not be able to perhaps maintain their skill levels as highly as they would, I guess, in a busier unit. So in other words, suggesting that only having occasional procedures is more dangerous. So the government has indicated that there is between about 6 and 10 patients per year. So this is an unusual caseload that we've seen in the past 4 weeks. So previously, babies needing this type of care were transferred to Melbourne, but with the COVID situation, they're now going to Sydney's Westmead Hospital. And so one of the other issues that's coming to spotlight as well is the change procedures due to COVID. So the opposition has a leaked document, which is the business case report, and it's about a year old, and it has actually warned of risks and said that at that time there had already been at least one avoidable death in relation to not having those services locally. So I guess in time we might, I guess, get a fuller picture of what that has looked like over the longer term than just, I guess, the events of this past month. So obviously this is a really complex issue, and I'm certainly not qualified to comment on the clinical merits of a local unit that is underutilised versus, I guess, transferring patients in the state to larger units. But in terms of the politics, I think this will hurt the government. The reporting system that came into the spotlight in the case of the bungle over the chemotherapy rates. So that was actually recommended by the coroner to fix that reporting system. And yet what we see this week is that same reporting system still exists. And there's been a suggestion that reports in relation to these baby deaths had been rejected because the system that doesn't exist cannot be said to have failed. So I think there's problems there. I also think, as I've mentioned, that the dragging out of the decision is also a source of criticism for the government, because I guess these are highly important issues, and simply have a plan and a decision that gives some certainty would help the doctors in particular, and also the families who are going through these really difficult situations. And I guess it puts the focus on the Women's and Children's Hospital, which has been, I guess, a lot in the focus lately because of the broader lack of resources and also the uncertainty around a proposal to build a new Women's and Children's Hospital alongside the Royal Adelaide Hospital. So I think the Women's and Children's Hospital is going to remain in the spotlight, and this could be something that, I guess, continues to plague the government in the lead up to the coming election. So certainly some quicker decision making is in order, and as you mentioned, there will be a review, and perhaps that can be something that can spur some action in regards to what is a really tragic story that's come to light in Parliament this week.
Many issues to keep an eye on there. Catherine, thank you so much for your time as always.
No worries, thank you.
Our state political correspondent Catherine Cochrane there from the University of Adelaide.